And we're holding on Ayin Vav Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Now that we went through the various cases of people who are chayiv sreifa, the various arayas that we were discussing in the last couple of days, plus the Bas Koyin, whose details we dealt with earlier in the Masechta, so now we're up to the next one of the four Mrs. Bestin. The following people get hereg, that their head is chopped off. Horetzeach va'anshe irani dachas, a murderer, and the people of an Irani Dachas. So the people of the Irani Dachas we're going to deal with in detail at the end of the Masechta. So here, in our Mishnah, in the next couple of Dafim, we're going to be focusing on the Ritzeach, on the various ways in which a person will be Chayiv Misa for Ritzicha. So first of all, Ritzeach Shehiko Es Chaveira Be'Evan Oy Be'Barzel. So first of all, if he hit somebody else with a stone or a piece of metal, a piece of iron, or obviously, various other things. The point is that the pasuk mentions these among the ways in which one person might kill another. One thing that we're going to be bringing up is, as we go through the next in the next couple of blocks, is that in general, Basin has to evaluate the murder weapon and see is this something that could reasonably have been expected to kill. So say, for example, you know, imagine a person wads up a piece of paper into a bowl and throws it at the other guy, and then the other guy falls down dead, for example. We can't be mechayiv and misa for that. It's obvious that the guy had a weak heart or something, and there's no way that would be considered deadly force. So the pasuk goes on in some detail. And the Gemara is going to analyze it in more detail in a couple of blocks from now. The Beis Din needs to get a hold of the murder weapon that's brought to Beis Din, and they evaluate, given the size of it and the shape of it and the distance from which it was thrown, et cetera, is this something that could reasonably be expected to kill? And also what part of the body it hit, et cetera. Anyway, so examples of that include stones and iron tools, as we'll see. The kavash alav l'secha mayim or l'secha ur. Here's another example. A person pressed somebody down in the water or in the fire. So in other words, he held them there. Ve'eni yochel lalas misham, so he can't get out of there. The mess, and then therefore the victim dies. Then in all those cases, the other person is chayev as a ritzeach. On the other hand, dochvei l'secha mayim or l'secha ur. But if he only pushed him into the water or into the fire, ve'yochel lalas misham, and the person still has enough strength to get out of there himself, or mess, and then he died, potter, then the person who put him in there will be potter. He may still be punishable by Hashem, but Beis Din won't be able to punish him because the counter argument would be the victim wasn't directly killed by what he did. Obviously, if the person hadn't done it, he wouldn't be in the water or in the fire, but nevertheless, he could have gotten out of there, and therefore you can't be mechayev of him for the fact that he put him in there. Another case, shisa boyas akelev. What happens if a person incites a dog against somebody else? Shisa boyas anachash, or he incited a snake to bite him. So also potter. So also in those cases, he's potter because then it's the dog or the snake itself that did it. As the Gemara is going to work out the details later on daf ein zayin ein ches. On the other hand, hishich bayis anachash, but if he actually made the snake bite him, meaning Rashi explains, he actually took the snake and in his hand and put the fangs of the snake on the other person's skin, and then the snake bit him, then Rabbi Yehuda would say he's chayev, v'chamim poitur, and even then the chachamim say that he's potter, as we'll learn on daf ayin ches, what the reasoning behind the two opinions is. So Rashi explains that he just put the fangs on the skin. He didn't actually push them in. The Yad Ramah actually learns that we're talking about he actually pushed the fangs in. But nevertheless, we're going to see in the Gemara why the Chachamim would still say that even in a case like that, he'd still be potter. So the Gemara starts off. Now, when it comes to the Torah goes on and Parshas Maaseh and discusses the various the various ways in which one person might injure, might kill another, and when he's chayv misa and not. So the Torah says, so the Torah mentions, for example, be'evan yod, in a stone of the hand, meaning a stone that the person picks up in his hand and throws it at the other person and kills him. Or, for example, the Pasuk mentions b'chli eitz yod, a wooden tool that he picks up and with his hand and uses to kill the other person. So it has to be, in other words, that the word yod indicates that it has to at least have a certain minimum shear. So again, like we said, you know, if he were to take a tiny pebble and throw it at the guy and he died, he wouldn't be chayav misa for that. But it doesn't say, when it comes to iron, the Torah doesn't say that. By iron, the Torah just says, v'im b'chli barzol hikohu, if he hit him with an iron tool, without mentioning yod. So why is that? Says Shmuel, chab barzol memis b'chol shehu, because iron, even a small piece, is able to kill. So Rashi explains, you can take, even if a person might, for example, take a needle, a tiny little thing, and stick it into the other guy's esophagus or his heart, and kill him that way. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos is bothered by that. In that case, then why is that unique to metal? You could say the same thing if he takes a short piece of wood, couldn't he conceivably do the same thing with a short piece of wood as well? So rather, Tosfos says that no, what it is because iron causes infection. So therefore, he strikes him with something iron, and therefore the result is the guy gets infected, and unless the infection is treated, then it's going to kill him. So that's how Tosfos learns. In the back of the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar Moshe Halevi Horowitz explains that the difference is, Rashi would say that when it comes to metal, it's not only that he stabs him with it, it could also be, for example, he throws it at him. Metal is strong enough that it could then penetrate and kill the person, as opposed to if he did the same kind of thing with a piece of wood, it's highly unlikely that it would do that. So Marshall also discusses over here in some detail, and he points out that he compares it with Rashi on the Pasuk, where Rashi on the Pasuk explains that we're not learning from the word Yod, but rather from the word Asher Yomus Boy. So why is Rashi over here? Why does Rashi over there explain that way rather than from what the Gemara is saying over here with the word Yad? And the Aruch HaNer explains that actually we actually need both words in order to explain that it means that first of all it has to be a certain size when it comes to most kinds of kalim. It needs to be a minimum size, and even by metal it needs to be something sharp, as the Gemara is going to go on to say that for example, if it wasn't a sharp piece of metal but rather a chunk of metal, then it's different. So Gemara continues. Tani nami halchi. We learn similarly in a Braisa. Rebbe Omer Goliv Yadur Lefnei Sha'om V'Haya Olam. It's well known and revealed to Hashem who created the world. Shabarzel Memes V'Chol Shehu. That iron, even a small piece, is able to kill, whether by puncturing, like according to Rashi, or by infecting, according to Tosfos. Lefichach. By Torah Shear. Therefore, the Torah does not give a shear for it, and just says generically that he killed him with iron. However, that would only apply, like we were saying, only if he punctured him with it, not, for example, if he took a chunk of metal and hit the guy over the head, then we would have to evaluate the size of that piece of metal, like we would with any other weapon, and see whether he that's what killed him. Alright, the Mishnah continued. We had the case of the Mishnah, we pressed the person down into the water versus where he just pushed him into the water, and in the ratio we said that he's chayev, and in the sefer we said he's potter. So the word points out ratio to busa kamash malon, the sefer to busa kamash malon. Both the ratio and the sefer, each one of them, there's a chidush in it, which is why the Mishnah had to spell it out. In the Resha, we're not necessarily talking about that the person who held him down is the one who pushed him into the water. So Reuven pushes Shimon into the water, and then Levi comes and holds Shimon and holds Shimon's head below water. So can't Reuven argue? Well, I'm not the one who pushed him in the first place. He wouldn't have been in the water. Levi, I mean, might be able to argue. Well, he wouldn't have been in the water in the first place if it hadn't been for Reuven. Nevertheless, Kibben and Yochel Lalas Misham, since Levi is preventing Shimon from getting out of there, Vemes, and then he died, Chayev, then he's still going to be Chayev, even though he's not the one who put him in there in the first place. Sefer, a Bosa, Kamash Malan, and the Sefer is also telling us a Chiddush. Apagab the Dochva, even if he himself pushed him in, so even Reuven who pushed him in, given the Yochel Lalas Misham, since at that point he could have gotten out of there, Umes, and then he ended up not getting out of there and he died, Potter, then Reuven is going to be Potter. So there's a Chiddush in both parts of the Mishnah. All right, the Gemara says, Kovash Manolon, where indeed do we know that when he pressed him down into the water or the fire that he should be Chayev? Why don't we say, in other words, that we just consider it Groma? The answer is, Omar Shmuel, de Omar Kro Oiv Eva. Because in that section, in Parshas Masei, when it discusses all the various ways in which one person might kill another and be Chayev Misa, so it describes, so one of the psukim, he says, Oiv Eva, or with hatred. The pasuk continues, he called over Yodah that he hit him with his hand. Now, so why does it have to mention that point about Oiv Eva? L'rabba says, Mitzamtzim, that comes to include also this Mitzamtzim. Mitzamtzim is another word for Kovish, that in other words, he Mitzamtzim, literally, we have Tzimtzum in Chassidus. It means that he constricted, he made a constricted space for him where he can't get out of there. So in other words, apparently the idea is, we're not just talking about where he literally put his hands on him and forced him under the water. We can even be talking about, as the Gemara is going to work out various details over here, where he put something over there that prevents the other guy from getting out. Let's say, for example, he put things. Imagine, for example, the guy's in a swimming pool, and he put something over the pool to prevent him from being able to stick his head above the water. So then we're saying that would be mitzamtzim, and he'd be chayev misa for that. And we learn that from the word oiva eva. So let's talk about this mitzamtzim a little bit. Hahu gavra de mitzamtzim l'chevesa d'chavre b'shimsha. There was once a person who did this kind of tzimtzum to somebody else's animal in the sun. In other words, what happened was the animal was out in the sun, and this person was mitzamtzim. He prevented the animal from being able to get out of the sun, whether by putting his hands directly on it, whether by building around it to prevent it from being able to get out of there. Whatever the case, and then it died. Umesa, the animal died. So now, let's talk about that. So now, obviously, there's no chiyuv misa for an animal, but we can talk about as far as nizikin. Here we're saying, we just said that mitzamtzim is chayiv misa. When it is chayiv misa, by retzeach, does the same principle apply that he should be chayiv nizikin as well? Ravina machayiv, Rav Acha bar Rav Potter. So there was a machlokas whether he'll be chayiv or Potter. Ravina Machayev, and Ravina says Kavachoymahu. Ravina says Kavachoymah. You can make a Kavachoymah to demonstrate that he should be Chayev Misa. Umar Retzeach, Shalei Osaba Shogeg Kamezid Ve'Ones Karotzen, Madach Bayer Retzeach. Now, Bayer Retzeach, as we know, there's a difference between whether he does the Mezid or whether he does Ve'Ones or Barotzen. Rashi, in a couple of in other places in Shas, explains that the Rotzen and Mezid are both the same thing, but there's a difference in that Mezid by definition is doing Berotzen, but in other words, when we talk about the converse of them, there is a difference. A person can be Shogig, where he didn't know better, and then there can be Onus, where he was forced into it, or where there was some circumstance beyond his control. So therefore we mentioned Shogig as the opposite of Mezid, and Onus as the opposite of Rotzen, just to keep things parallel. Anyway, the point is, by Retzeach, obviously we don't compare them. A person is Retzeach b'mezid, he gets killed. He's Retzeach b'shogeg, he runs to the Ohr HaMikvah. And if it's onus, then he's not punishable at all. Tosfos brings over here, you have cases, now Tosfos actually gets into it. Well, so let's continue the Kavachomer, then we'll talk about it. So anyway, so Ma Retzeach shall also be shogeg g'mezid v'onus k'rotzen, nevertheless chiyuv boyos ha-mitzamtzim, and we see that not only is a person chayev for directly killing the other person, but also for mitzamtzim, where again he constricted the space for the other person, and therefore he ran out of air. Nizokin, well, then Ravina argues when it comes to Nizikin, Shosaban, Shogig, Mazid, for Onus Kurotzen, whereby Nizikin, there's no difference between Shogig and Mazid and Onus and Rotzen because Adam Mu'ad La'olam. So when he does something directly, then he's chayev. Then he's chayev. And Rashi points out, after all, that's true. Even if he does the nezek while he's asleep, Adam Mu'ad La'olam. So then ein adin shechiyah be'anus ha'matzamtzim. So how much more so that he should be chayev for matzamtzim for having done this, for preventing the animal from getting out of the sun and therefore being killed, and therefore dying. Tosfos points out there can actually be cases, rare cases of nizikin where a person can be potter for onus. Now you have like this: if let's say, for example, a person falls asleep and near him there are kalim, and then during the night he moves around and breaks the kalim, he's going to be chayev because other mu'ad la'olam, he's always mu'ad whether awake or asleep. But Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi, let's say for example he was sleeping and then somebody else came and put kalim next to him, then if he breaks them in his sleep, he's going to be kotter because then it's complete onus. The kalim weren't even there when he went to sleep. Tosfos points out there are other examples where we say that there can be onus when it comes to nizikin. So when we say over here, when the Gemara is saying that there's no onus by nizikin, we're talking about by and large, but there are certain rare cases where there can be onus by nizikin. Anyway, so that's Ravina's argument. Therefore, is that based on that kavachomer, then we should be mechayev him from a tzamtzim. An interesting point, by the way, in that is we learned yesterday about ein oinshin min adin. You can't punish somebody with chiyuv misa or malchus based on a kavachomer. You need to have a clear limud in the pasuk for it. Here we're saying that here at least Ravina is saying that it seems that's not so, and you can actually be mechayven to pay based on a kavachomer. There is some discussion about that, about whether in fact you can use a kavachomer to make a person pay. Anyway, so that's Ravina's argument. On the other hand, Rav Achabar Rav said that he would be potter in this case of mitzamtzim of the animal. Omer Masharshia, my time of davur de abba de potter. So the Masharshia in a later generation says, why did my grandfather, Rav Achabar Rav, was Masharshia's grandfather, why did he say that he's potter? Omer Kro, because the pasuk says, most yumas hamaka ritzeahu. Because the pasuk says, That when it comes to a ritzeach, the one who hit him shall be killed. He is a ritzeach. This is the end of the pasuk over Eva. We quoted before the pasuk over Eva, and we said that means that refers to mitzamtzim. And then that same pasuk finishes off that if he killed him, the Eva most yumas hamaka ritzeachu. Then he's because he hit the other person and he's a ritzeach, therefore he's put to death. So the word ritzeachu teaches us, says Rav Achabar Rav, therefore, that's a mild. Only by Ritzeach is the Torah telling us that he's chayiv even from a tzamtzim, even though, again, we're not talking about that he actually, the adayim killed the other person. He just prevented him from getting oxygen, and nevertheless, he's chayiv. But that would only be by Ritzeach, where the Torah tells us. But Nizokin, like chayiv lom mitzamtzim, whereas Rav Achabar Rav says, and Rav Mishawshi is explaining, that by Nizokin we don't have a pasuk to tell us that he should be chayiv, and therefore, in fact, he's potter. So the halacha in this, the Rambam Paskins, like Ravina, that nevertheless he is chayiv. So now let's talk about some more dinim as far as ritzicha, as far as one person killing another, other indirect ways that he might kill him. Omar Rava, kofsoi, if he tied the other person up, umes barav, and then that other person died of hunger, potter, then the one who tied him up is going to be potter, because at the time that he tied him up, the cause of his death didn't exist yet. The hunger, the fact that the guy is hungry and more he starves, that starvation didn't exist at the time. That's something that came into being later. So therefore, in other words, it's called basically groma. Now, it doesn't mean that the guy gets away scot-free. That Amram stresses in all these cases that we're going to talk about when he's potter, we're saying now he's potter, medina adam, he's still chai medina shemayim, and that Amram's phrasing is derish domim, derish mimenu, that the Hashem who seeks and who seeks to punish for spilling the blood of the innocent is going to get him, but based in on earth can't get him. So the Gemara continues. That Tosfos, by the way, points out this would be true even if when he tied him up, the guy was already hungry. Because the fact is, the degree of hunger that he was suffering at the time wouldn't have been enough to kill him. And again, therefore, the hunger is coming on its own. The starvation is coming on its own, and therefore, he would be potter. On the other hand, V'omar Rava. So Rava, on the other hand, also says, Kofse b'chama umes. What if he tied the other person up in the sun? And then the heat of the sun beating down on him, killed him. Or b'tsina umes. So he tied him up in a place where it's cold, and the guy froze to death. In those cases, chayev. Then he would be chayev. Because so therefore he's chayev, because at that point Tosfos explains the distinction is that there the heat or the cold that is going to kill him already exists. There hasn't been enough of it yet to kill him, but nevertheless there's still that sunbeam or that heat or that cold is in and of itself enough to kill if he's in it long enough. So therefore, so Rava says in that case he will actually be chayev. On the other hand, soif chamalavoi, soif tsinalavoi. On the other hand, if he tied him up in a place where the sun is eventually going to get to him, and or the cold is eventually going to get to him, then potter, then he'd be potter for the same reason as with the starvation, because then you have, again, the cause of death doesn't yet exist at that time. Meaning, in other words, Tosfos explains that when we said before that a mitzamtzim is chayev, that would only be where whatever it is that he was mitzamtzim him in is something where the danger already exists. So in the cases of the Mishnah, for example, he's mitzamtzim him, he prevents him from getting out of the water or out of the water or the fire themselves are deadly, as opposed to over here, when he ties him up in a place where eventually the sun is going to start beating down on him, but right now it's not yet, and therefore it would be considered grumma. So Beistin can't execute him for that. So instead, Hashem will deal with him. Tosfos also discusses the question. Now, what would happen? For example, let's say he tied him up inside the house, then he took him outside to a place where soif chama lovei. Then Tosfos says that may depend on. Then we have a relevant Gemara from Bava Kamma that discusses the question Ishrei Mishum Chitzav or Ishrei Mishum Mamonah. When a person lights a fire and the Torah tells us it spreads to somebody else's property, then he's kind of the one who lit the fire is hired for the damages. So we had a machlokas over there, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, what the underlying halachic theory is behind that. On what grounds is he hired? In other words, why don't we consider it Grama? Is it Ishrei Mishum Chitzav? When he lit the fire, it's considered like shooting an arrow, and everything that comes from that is considered a direct outgrowth of that. So the same way a person shoots an arrow, he's responsible for everything that happens as a result of that arrow, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. So it would be also with fire. Or do we say Ishim Ishim Mamonai? Do we say the same way as a person is chayev for his ox or whatever or his burr or whatever that causes damage? So it is also over here. So Tosfos discusses over here again that if he had the person already tied up and then brought him to a place where soif chamalavoi, then maybe we would say, if we say ishri mishum chitzav, then we would say in fact that that's considered his direct arrows, and therefore we would be mechayev him. And Tosfos goes on to discuss various angles in that with various things that we're talking about over here in terms of how we distinguish between direct action versus grama. So Tosfos ends up saying that actually even, in fact, he tied him up and then he put him in a place where soif chamalavoi, then maybe still he would be potter, because again it would be what's called koyach koichai. It's an indirect thing. Again, it would be there's a certain degree of grama in it. So in other words, here, all Gemara is talking about where directly he tied him up and left him in a place where eventually the sun is going to shine on him and the heat will kill him, or the cold will kill him. But Tosfos is discussing, what about you have a parallel case where he tied him up in one place and then brought him to this place where Seif Chamalavai or Seif Tinalavai. Anyway, so far, again, what we have is what Rava is telling us is there's a difference whether it was direct or indirect. So in the cases of our Mishnah, of Metzamsim, it's more direct because he's already in something that would kill him if he doesn't get out of there, and therefore the one who was Metzamsim, the person who prevented him from getting out, again, not even we're talking about he didn't put his hands directly on him, but he blocked his way to get out, and therefore the guy drowned or got burnt, then he'd be Chayev. On the other hand, we said that if it was a matter of starvation, then the starvation doesn't exist yet, but on the other hand, we're saying the Chama or the Tzina, there's a difference whether he's actually already in the Chama or the Tzina, or whether it's a case where they're going to come yet. V'omar Rava, and Rava says, here's another case, Kofse lifnei ari potter. What if he tied up the person and put him in front of a lion? So then he would eat potter. So Rashi explains the reason is because even if the guy wasn't tied up, realistically, is he going to be able to fight off the lion? No. So then, in that case, he's going to be dead anyway. So therefore, you can't say that the one who tied him up has actually caused him to be killed. Now, that's according to Rashi. The Yad Ramah actually discusses, and the Yad Ramah discusses that in that case, then how does it work? Then we just said that Sof Hamalovoi, Sof Sinalovoi, then he's Potter, because right now there's nothing, right now there's nothing deadly over here, but then in that case, So what's the difference between that and the case of the lion? So the Yad Ramah explains that the lion kind of acts independently, and therefore you can't be mechayev him, as opposed to the sun doesn't act independently. It's a natural force, and therefore he can be chayev for that. So on the other hand, Rava continues, Lefnei Yatushin, but if he tied up the person in front of mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes stung him, and I guess took out enough of his blood that killed him, then Chayev. Then he would be Chayev because if he hadn't been tied up, he would have been able to fight off the mosquitoes. Tosfos actually makes a different distinction, that a lion is not necessarily, the lion actually has not actually started injuring him yet. When he's lying over there, then the lion goes and jumps on him and kills him. But if, as opposed to the mosquitoes already starting to sting him, so Rava holds the fact that the ones who end up killing him are not necessarily the same ones who bit him in the first place. Rava doesn't hold that there's a distinction in that. On the other hand, Rav Ashi does draw such a distinction. Afilu lifnei yatushin, even if he tied him up in front of mosquitoes, nami potter, then he would also be potter hani azli v'hani osu, because after all, the mosquitoes are coming and going, and the ones that end up killing him are not necessarily the same ones that stung him in the first place. So therefore, again, it would be more like Seif Chamalovoi, Seif Sinalovoi, where eventually the cause of death is going to happen, but it's not necessarily yet. So here we're talking about, I guess, where the guy is killed by mosquitoes because they suck out enough of his blood. I suppose the same thing would be if he puts him in a place, for example, where the mosquitoes carry malaria or other diseases like that, and he ends up getting malaria and dying from that. I guess it would probably be the same thing. Either way, Rava is saying that he'd be chayev, and Rav Ashi is saying he'd be potter.
How can you say that malaria would be the same case? Because
maybe you could argue malaria is such, you know, lover. That's true. Maybe not. Yeah, you may be right. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. All right. Next. Itmar. So now we have a further discussion related to this topic. Kofa olav gigus. What if a person overturned a barrel over the other, over somebody else? So now, and then he dies inside there because eventually he runs out of oxygen. Eventually it's not airtight, but it's closed enough that now eventually he uses up all the air in there and he suffocates. Or upora olav maziva, or the other way around, he opened up the roof of the house, and therefore now the cold came in, and the guy ended up freezing over there. So either way, in other words, so in the second case, at least we're talking about that he was sleeping. In the first case, maybe he's sleeping, maybe not, doesn't matter. The point is, in other words, in both of those cases, again, he didn't touch the person himself, but he did something around him that causes him to die. So then what happens? So Rava and Rav Zeira disagree. One says he's chayav because he's chayav because as soon as he put the barrel on top of him, or as soon as he opened up the roof, then that already he started already the cause of death. So therefore, so you can compare it to so it'd be comparable to shooting an arrow. So Tosfos points out, Sof Chama Lovoi, Sof Tina Lovoi is, there's no sunlight there yet, there's no cold there yet, so therefore, so it didn't begin at that time. It began only later. As opposed to over here, we're talking about that already, when he puts the barrel on top of him, then that begins the process that now the guy is going to use up the air in there and run out of oxygen. And the same thing with the other one. So Rava says he's going to be Chayev, and Rav Zeira says he's Potter. Because again, the cause of death didn't exist yet. Because at this point, when he put the barrel over him, the guy hasn't run out of air yet, and therefore it would be considered a grumma when later on he does run out of air. All right, the Gemara says which one said which. So we have this machlokas, Rava and Rav Zeira. So which one is saying which? So the Gemara says Tistayim de Rava who de Omar Potter. We can conclude that within this machlokas that Rava is the one who said Potter, de Omar Rava Kofse Mesvarav Potter. Just like we said a few lines earlier, that if he tied him up and the guy died of starvation, then he's Potter. Because again, the point is that the cause of death didn't exist at the time. The same way over here. The same way over here, the cause of death didn't exist at the time. The cause of death in the first case is suffocation, and in the second case is freezing, and neither of those existed at the moment when he put the barrel over him or opened up the roof. An interesting point over here, by the way, is that they bring the Rambam, when he brings this halacha, he mentions the case that he mentions this case, the Rambam paskins like the opinion Potter, which so far we're saying would seem to be according to Rava. So he mentions, so he says he's Potter in that case of the barrel, but then the Rambam goes on to say that if he enclosed him within a building, and then the guy inside an airtight building, and then the guy suffocated, then he'd be chayev. So it seems that Amram seems to be contradicting himself. Then is he chayev or Potter when he suffocates the person? So the Mefroshim discuss. So in fact, the Kesef Mishnah leaves a Tzorach Iyun over there. Why would the Rambam make that distinction? The Or Sameach gives an interesting explanation that with a barrel, it's something that you can move a little bit. You can move enough of it to be able to get in some air. So as opposed to a building, you can't. And therefore, once he's stuck inside there, then inevitably he's going to run out of air. And he goes on to say, in other words, that what it means is eventually, there's only so much he can move it. So each time he's only getting a little bit of fresh air. Eventually he still runs out and then he dies. But at that point, then it would be considered a grumma. In fact, the Rambam uses the expression v'hinichem mefarfer, that he leaves him like writhing, like he can just barely move. So in other words, the guy starts out having enough strength to be able to move the barrel a little bit and get a little bit of air. But over time, eventually, as he's getting less and less, then he loses that strength to, and then he can't move it anymore, and then he ends up suffocating. But nevertheless, that's still different than a building where to begin with it's airtight, and he can't move any part of it. So that's how the Or Sameach reconciles it on them. Anyway. So again, so in the Gemara, so since Rava had said that if he tied him up and the guy died of starvation, then the one who tied him up is Potter from Mrs. Bastin, so therefore we should draw an analogy between that and putting him under a barrel or opening up the roof. But the Gemara says, Adrabah, on the contrary, you can say that Rava, that those two dinim of Rava do not agree with one another. And therefore, Tistayim de Rav Zeira hu d'ama Potter. You should rather conclude that Rav Zeira is the one who says he's Potter in the case of the barrel. D'amar Rav Zeira, Haiman de'ayri l'chavri b'beisa d'shisha, because Rav Zeira says if somebody brings somebody else into a marble building, which is also the throughout Shas, we assume that marble, that is a structure made out of marble, is much more airtight than one made out of other materials. The obviously shraga, and he lit a candle in the house, so then the candle ends up using up all the oxygen, ummes, and then the person died of suffocation, chayev, then the one who put him in there and lit the candle is going to be chayev. Now, taima de obviously shraga. Now, why is Reb Zera being the chayev him? Because he lit the candle, and therefore, in other words, that now that really begins the process, that really directly begins the process of using up all the oxygen. But apparently, according to what Reb Zera is saying, if he hadn't lit the candle, then he wouldn't be, and then he wouldn't be chayav. He put him in there, and eventually he is going to suffocate there because the place is airtight. Nevertheless, it seems like Reb Zera would potter him. Well, then in that case, then Reb Zera must be the one in the case of the barrel who says he's potter. So the answer is Amri, no. So they say the Chachmei HaGemara explained that, no, there's a difference. Hosam b'loy shraga loy maschel hevla b'shaite. The difference is that without the candle, the process of him suffocating does not begin right away. Because it's a house that has, even though it is airtight, it still has a substantial amount of air in it. Hocha b'loy shraga nami maschel hevla b'shaite. As opposed to over here, when we're talking about the barrel, even without lighting a candle in it, then therefore, still, it's a very constricted, it's a very confined area, and therefore he is going to die soon of suffocation if he doesn't get fresh air. So that would be the difference. So in other words, when it comes to when it comes to soif chama and soif tzina before, then we'll say we're potter. Then we're saying he's potter. Where he actually tied him up in chama or tzina, where they are either chama or tzina themselves that are enough to be able to kill or enough to kill him, and therefore he's chayim. Here, what you're talking about, it gets worse and worse over time. He uses up more and more of the oxygen, so therefore, so there you have. So in other words, there you have, he starts out with a little bit of hunger, and it gets worse and worse until eventually he starves. But as opposed to over here, where right away when he puts the barrel on him, then already it's very directly beginning that he's going to die from that.
What is hevla?
Hevla means stale air. Stale air. In other words, think of it. You know, you have
hevel piv.
Yes. So in other words, his
hevel
piv means his breath. When a person breathes in oxygen and breathes out carbon dioxide. Uh-huh. So if he's in and you can't live on carbon dioxide. So when a person breathes out, eventually, in other words, he replaces his body is replacing the oxygen in that room or in that barrel or whatever with carbon dioxide, and therefore eventually he suffocates. That's what Rashi means.
There's two things you talked about. One thing is that the oxygen is very little. And the second thing is that the person's hevel piv is his dioxide.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you can't.
He's out and doesn't circulate.
Right.
So now they. So we could have thought that.
So we could have thought that it's considered a grumma.
His own. Who can it be? He alone brought about his own death.
But no, so right.
He was doing this process of ventilating.
Right.
And we're saying no.
We're saying that no, because
as he comes in
over there, he's right away. He's breathing all the time, and there's more and more carbon dioxide coming in. Right.
Right. So you brought the carbon dioxide on him, not that he was breathing hard.
That's the point. In other words, you prevented the exchange of air that eventually kills him, right? So the Gemara says, Simon Sulam Tris Sammonin Bakoiso. So now the Gemara is going to bring a Simon for a few dinim that we're going to talk about over here about things that where some of groma or not groma, as the case may be, unusual ways in which a person kills somebody else and will or won't be chayv misa. So the first one, Omar Rava, Dochfei Labur. If a person pushes somebody else into a pit, the sulam babur, and there is a ladder in the pit, so therefore the guy would be able to come out to climb out. Now somebody else comes and takes away the ladder, so now the person can't get out anymore. Even if he himself took out the ladder before the other person fell in, potter, either way he'll still be potter. Because when he threw him in there, he would have been able to get out, and therefore, again, you can't say that. So it's like the case in the Mishnah where he threw him into the water, where he's not chayav misa for that, because the person could have gotten out by himself. So the same way over here. In other words, we're talking about, obviously, we're not talking about that the pit is not so deep that he wouldn't be able to get out. So therefore, so at this point, yochel lalos.
He had a moment to leave, and he didn't.
Since he had the ability to leave, yeah. And as far as taking away, the ladder, that itself, Rashi points out that taking away the ladder would be grumma, and therefore he's potter for that as well.
One second, and he died the hevel of the bird, or he died from starvation?
Doesn't say one way or the other whether he died from hevel. The Pashtus were talking about that he died from starvation, but you're right, it doesn't say one way or the other. Even hevel, though, I mean, the fact is, the Gemara does discuss elsewhere that a burr has hevel, but the fact is the top of the burr is open. There is fresh air coming into the burr. So,
it's a process that begins when you're lower than 10 tfachim.
That's true. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that a burr deeper than 10 tfachim, as long as it's narrower than its depth, has hevel. But I don't know if that necessarily applies to a person. I mean, an animal is lying over there on the floor of the burr, so therefore, and it can't breathe, and it suffocates from the hevel. Whether that would apply to a person in a burr, I don't know. V'amar Rava. Rava says, here's another din. Zorak b'chetz. What if Reuven shoots an arrow at Shimon? However, Shimon at that point has a shield in his hand. And now Levi comes and pulls away the shield before the arrow reaches it, and therefore the arrow reaches Shimon and kills him. Or even if Reuben himself, who shot the arrow, he runs ahead of the arrow and pulls away the shield. Also Potter, then he would also be Potter, the Reuben who shot the arrow, the Be'idna de Shadyebe, because when he shot the arrow, Mifsek Piske Gire, the arrows are interrupted, meaning in other words, when he shot it, that arrow, the conditions were such that that arrow would not have had the ability to kill him, and therefore now we can't say that he should be Chayav Misa for that.
Where did he throw up the arrow?
No, we're not talking about stone. We said an arrow, but we're talking about Reuben shot an arrow, and then we're saying that now, before the arrow reached Shimon, then Levi took away the shield, or Reuben himself took away the shield. How could Reuben physically outrun the arrow? It's a good question. Obviously, we could say we're not talking about an arrow, but rather some other projectile. Or we could say maybe he does it. You know what? Actually, this whole thing of shields and all that, this and the next piece of Gemara over here that we're going to talk about, as far as a piece that we're going to talk about soon about Ashkelon Lebidka Demaya, where he takes away a dam and causes water to flood out. Those two pieces of Gemara are used quite a lot by Achronim to deal with various matters of electricity and other things like that on Shabbos. To what extent do we consider them grumma, and to what extent do we consider them direct action? So here one point is, for example, here we have removing the shield makes it, in other words, that it's considered grumma. So there's an argument that some achronim made that in a similar vein, for example, when you turn on a light switch, all you're doing is you're removing a barrier between the electrical wires, and maybe therefore it should be considered grumma based on this. But no, because we're going to talk about soon, as far as the case of at the bottom of the almond, we're going to talk about the case of a dam of water where the water is right there behind the dam, and the same way over here, the electrical current is right there available to start flowing as soon as the wires are connected. All of this does come up in discussions in the halachas of electricity on Shabbos and other things like that, whether electricity is considered direct action or not. You know, back 100
extension back to what we were saying, you could say that through a switch you removed it.
So that's a possibility, right? You could use a switch to remove it remotely, right? I mean, aside from Hilchos Shabbos, for example, this comes up, let's say, you know, 150 or so years ago when they started developing electrical machinery, and they started, there was the question of making tzitzis by machine, there was a question of making matzis by machine. So one of the big discussions was this question, based on this Gemara, then based on the Gemara later on in the Amud, which of these things are considered direct action and which are not? If you flip the switch on that machine, is that considered action such that now you can say that tzitzis are made by human agency, or the matzah is made by human agency, or do you say that's basically grumma? So all of this factors into that. The Chazon Ish actually makes a point over here that even as far as the shield, only if a person removes the shield, then he would be potter, as we're saying over here. But if the shield, let's say, flew away, the Ruach Matsuya, then he would still be chayev. Now, the difference is, in other words, basically, because when it comes to a person removing it, he has the choice. He makes the decision whether to remove the tris. as opposed to when it fly, when the treatise flies away naturally, then it wasn't based on him. Then the fact that it, the fact that the protection was removed wasn't based on his rotzen, and therefore we judge the fact that that when he shot the arrow, there was it had the potential to go and kill.
I don't mean to expand the conversation, but you say a person took the Wisdom Shield, as in a, meaning a third person?
No, that's what Gemara is saying, even the person himself. But in other words, the point is, either way, there was human choice in the matter. That's the Chazon Ish points this out, as opposed to, in other words, if it flew away in Ruach Metzuyah, then we would be Milchayev, the person who shot the arrow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Then the Gemara continues, V'omar Rava, here's another case. Zorak by Chetz, what if Reuven shot an arrow at Shimon, V'samon b'yodei, but Shimon has with him, he has medicines that he would be able to be cured of the arrow wound. U'va'achro pizron, but somebody else came and scattered those medicines, and now therefore he has nothing to cure himself with, and therefore he ends up dying. And again, Vafilu who called him a pizron, even if Reuven himself, after shooting the arrow, went and scattered the medicines, Potter, then also he's going to be Potter for the same reason. Because unlike now, in the previous case, the arrow wouldn't have hit him at all because of the shield. In this case, it would have hit him, but he would have been able to apply these remedies right away and cure himself. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, at that time, there was that capability to cure him, and therefore it wasn't a deathly blow. And therefore, the fact that later on the Samonim become unavailable is not a reason to be Mechayev, the one who shot the arrow. So the Gemara says, Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says, Hilchach. Well, based on that then, Afilu Samonim Bashuk, then we don't have to say that the case is that Shimon had the Samonim available with him. Even if such medicines are available in the market, and then later on, by the time then, when after the arrow hit him, then we go and we find that the last one just sold out, or that whatever, that he didn't go and buy the ones that he could have, then also Potter, then he's also going to be Potter to be in the Shadabay, Yochale Snappas Haba, actually that was from the previous line, yeah. I feel in Hassaman Bashuk, even if the medicines are in the marketplace. So now, in the Rav Acha Brei de Rava asked Rav Ashi, well, would that be so? Nizam Nelo Samman and Mahu. What would be the other way around? What would happen if he was shot with the arrow, and now after that, he gets the Sammanim available to him? Somebody brings them to him, but he didn't use them, and he ended up dying. Mahu, what would be the din now of the one who shot the arrow? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, Hare Yotzim and Beis Din Zakai. Listen, the one who shot the arrow at him would have, if it had come to Beis Din at that point, he would have gone out of Beis Din innocent, because at that point it's not considered a deadly blow, because there were medicines available to him. So therefore, so the same thing now, you can't be Machayev him for the fact that the victim did not end up using those medicines. So yes, so Rashi says, in other words, that it doesn't even mean that it actually went to Beis Din. It just means had it gone to Beis Din at that point, he would have been Potter. Therefore, now after the fact, we can't be Mechayev him. So the Yad Ramah explains that actually we are talking about that after it already went to Beis Din and he was Potter. Then listen, you know, we already have. Once he went out of Beis Din Zakai, then we're not Mechayev him again. In other words, it sounds like a point to the Yad Ramah. If it hadn't actually gone to Beis Din yet, and the person died before it went to Beis Din, then maybe we could be Mechayev him. But now, if practically speaking, we already went to Beis Din, and when we pastored him, then we can't now be Mechayev him because circumstances changed. Incidentally, there's an interesting thing in this connection. The Gemara brings in other places. The Gemara brings in Yevamos and in Gittin a case where one person cuts the other one's throat. And nevertheless, the Gemara says over there that in certain cases, the one who did the cutting may be Potter, because it's sort of like we were saying before, Kirav Mes Misasei, the person thrashes around, and that causes the wound to get worse and for it to kill him. So the Gemara brings this in connection with some other discussions in Yevamos and Gittin. There's a story involving the Rambam that Rambam tells about himself, a story in this connection where he wrote this in Hilchos Tzeach Shmirat Nefesh, in the appropriate place. So one time he says one of the Dayanim in Egypt, or Pinchas, comes to him and asks him, where's the source of this halacha? The Rambam says, probably in Sanhedrin or Marcus. That's where these dinim are discussed, no? The Rav says, I looked, I didn't find it. The Rambam starts thinking. He says, I think it's in Gittin. He takes the Gemara Gittin off the shelf and starts looking. He can't find it. It is in Gittin over there, but like I said, Amram overlooked it. And then afterwards, so the Dayan leaves, and then afterwards that Amram remembers, he says, I remember now it's a Gemara in Yevamos, and he goes and he informs this Dayan about it. So then that Amram says, in the continuation of his letter, you know, he says, it occurred to me that really, you know, I wrote the Yad HaChazaka without any Mar Mekoymus. So it's one thing, for example, let's say something in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh, fine. Yeah, you'd expect to find it in Sanhedrin or Marcus. You wouldn't expect to find it in Yevamos or in Gittin. So at least he says to himself in this letter, I should write an index of all of those out-of-place halachas in the Rambam, at least where you can find those. In the end, he never had the chance to write that, but that's the Noitz HaKelim ever since then, and down to our times when the Rebbe had them put together, the Maram HaKemus LaRambam, and Tavshin Dalad Mem, Tavshin Mem Hei, is all doing that, tracing the source of each halacha that Amam says. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. V'oman Rava. Here's another din, Rava says. Zorak kadur bakosol. If a person, Zorak tsur bakosol, rather. Zorak tsur bakosol. If a person throws a stone at a wall, v'chozor lachareha, and it bounced back off the wall, v'horga, and it killed somebody, chayev, then he would be chayev. Is considered his direct koyach. We wouldn't say the fact that it bounced off the wall would make it considered an indirect koyach. No, it's considered direct. The tona tuna, and in fact, we learn a brisa that says the same thing. Tona tuna literally means our tana taught, which means, in other words, we have a brisa that says exactly the same idea. The brisa says, "Could go in elo a masachin b'kader." For example, you have people who are playing with a ball. And a hard ball, obviously, yeah. And we're talking about, so Rashi explains the nature, so in the case, so Rashi explains in the case of the stone and in the case of the ball, we're talking about that he actually intends to kill the other one. So then Rashi learns, in other words, that we're talking about he'd be chayav misa. Tosfos actually discusses at some length over here that we're not talking about as far as chayav misa b'mezid, but rather we're talking about when he does b'shoyig and that he should be chayav golus for it. The point of it being, in other words, there is quite a bit of discussion, because if it's bemezid, then how can you give him asra, what do you mean, you tell him, don't throw that ball, or don't throw that stone, and the guy says, afal pikein, I'm doing it anyway, well then, the Gemara is going to distinguish between whether the person who was killed was within four amas or not. The Gemara is going to discuss in a few lines, if it was bemezin, then what's the difference, four amas or not?
Why? Because if you told him
don't throw that ball or don't throw that whatever, because of the ricochet off the wall is likely to kill the other person, and he says Alpha became, then what's the difference? Four amas or not four amas?
The thrust.
I understand, but the point is, in other words, that's not the point. If they're talking about, again, Basin is always going to have to evaluate whether the force of the blow was enough to kill. But if we're talking about he threw it hard enough against the wall that it can kill someone who's 8 amas away, then he should be, and he said he was hit through after the missa, then he should be chayav for 8 amas away as well. So, I don't see that happening. You don't see that happening because you're not thinking, because you have to think of the different possibilities as far as the strength of the ball and whatever. But no, anyway. So let's learn the Gemara and then we'll talk more about that. So you have people who play a ball game. So Rashi explains exactly that they throw it very hard against the wall so that it'll bounce back. Now, Rashi also explains that part of the rules of the game are that after Reuven throws the ball against the wall, then he runs away from there. Now Shimon catches the ball and hits him with it. So now, in other words, So if he actually intended, if Reuben, when he was throwing the ball, Shimon, for that matter, when he's throwing the ball, if he actually intends to hit with enough force to kill the other one, then the Braise is saying that he'd be chayav. Shehogu b'mezid, if they kill b'mezid, neherogin, then they can be executed for that. B'shoigig golem, and if they do b'shoigig, then they would go into golos. So the Braise is clearly talking about shoigig or mezid, but Rava had mentioned only one case of chayev, and Rashi and Rava hadn't specified whether he meant whether it means b'shoigig or b'mezid. So Rashi first brings the explanation that we're talking about Niskaven Lyogus Chaveira, that he intends to kill the other one, and further down on the Omud Rashi says so Tosfos disagrees and says that we're actually talking about the Indian Golos, we're talking about where it's a matter of Shriging. So the Gemara says, so what's the Chiddush? B'shoyge golem pshita. Obviously, there should be chayav golos for killing b'shoyge in this case with the ball game. And the answer is you're right. That's not a chiddush. B'mezid na'rogan tzrichalei. The chiddush is that he's chayav if he threw it b'mezid. Maudetema. And the point is, you would have thought hasras sofiku because you could argue that it's only a hasras sofik. When they are mastering him, don't throw that ball because it might kill. It's only because it might kill. It's not necessarily going to kill. So how can he be chayav nisa for that? Mi yema dehadra. Who says that it's going to bounce back so forcefully and that it's going to bounce back so forcefully and that it's going to hit the other person? Mashmalan. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us that nevertheless it is still a valid hasra. As long as Yeshba Kedei Lahomis, as long as it's strong enough to kill, then he would be Chayiv Misa. However, Tony Rav Tachlifa Bama Rava Kamei Rababohu, that it's not so simple to go in Edo Masach and Lakadu Shahorgu, these people who are playing with a bull and they kill, that would only be Toich Arba Amos Potter. If it was within 4 amas of the wall, then the person who threw it would be potter. Chutzav amas chayev. But if he's beyond 4 amas, then he would be chayev. So here's where Rashi explains that. So before we were saying again in the case of the tzur and the case of the pebble, Rashi had explained and talking about b'mezid, niskav and laring. The Braised talked about where both b'mezid and b'shriging. But here we're talking about Rashi's first explanation is that we're talking about as far as golos, that he would be potter. It's not considered killing b'shoyging. But if it's outside of 4 amas, then he would be chayev golos. Further on, Rashi says that no, in both cases, yesh meforshim, that we're talking about chayev and potter as far as misa. So, omale ravina l'ravashi hechidomi. What exactly is the scenario? Why should there be a difference between within 4 amas and outside of 4 amas?
Second, how can we be talking about golos if we're talking about as far as sofik?
No, that was before. That was in terms of the Braisa. The Braisa had said that if he throws the ball. Now we have Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava is teaching another Braisa, that a different Braisa that distinguishes between within 4 amas and outside of 4 amas. So he argues. He brings a different Braisa. So Omele Ravina L'Ravashi Hechidami. Idikon Nichale, if he wanted the ball to fly back, Afilo Purtanami, then he should be Chayev, even if the guy was very close to the wall. The Idil Nichale, and if he didn't mean that it should bounce back so hard, Afilo Tuvanami Loi, then he should be Potter, even if it bounced back a lot. So why is the Tachlifa Bamarova's Braisa saying that there's a difference between within 4 amas and outside 4 amas? What's the difference? Omale, so Rav Ashi explains, Stam mistachken bekader kama de ayli tfe minon nichalei. When people are playing this ball game, they try to stand as close as possible to the wall. They want to throw the ball hard so that it will bounce back as far as possible. So he didn't intend for it to go less than 4 amas. The whole point of it is that he wants it to go as far as possible. So if it hit somebody within 4 amas of the wall, then you can say there was no kavana to, so it's not considered, he'd be potter from golos. Or if you say that we're talking about Misa, then he'd be Potter from Misa. But if you say that, but if it bounces back more than 4 amas, well, that's what he intended. He wanted it to bounce back at least that distance, then therefore you can be Mechayim him. So again, that's the point of Rashi, and then Tosfos discusses over here and compares it to a case. First of all, again, Tosfos says we're talking strictly as far as B'shoyig. We're not talking about B'mezid. But where Tosfos compares it to a case from Bava Kama where a person intended to throw something 2 amas and it wound up going 4 amas. So now you have here the other way around. He wants it to go 4 amas and it went only 2 and then hit a person within that. And then Tosfos goes and discusses in some detail various details and various ins and outs of that. The Ran also talks about that, you know, here Tosfos had asked the question, how could there be Hasra over here? The question was that how can we say it's Bemezid? Because how could there be Hasra over here where again, if you warn him not to throw it, and he says, I'm going to throw it anyway, then it doesn't really matter, four Amos or not four Amos. So the Ran discusses that and explains that they're warning the person, don't throw it because it might get out of control and it might kill. And he says, I'm going to do it anyway. So he's telling him, don't try to make it bounce off the wall, even though you want it to bounce more than four amas, because there's somebody standing there within four amas and it may hit him. And he says, I'm going to throw it anyway. But the Gemara is saying, the fact is, the nature of the game is you want it to bounce back four amas, and therefore you can say that when it bounced back only two amas and hit the person, you still, according to Tosfos, you still can't consider it that there was hasra for misa. So the Gemara continues, Lememra de Kihai Gavna Koichehu. So you're telling me this kind of thing of a ball bouncing off a wall is considered Koichehu, is considered his direct action, and therefore he can be chayev for it, as the case may be. Or a mini, I have a contradiction. We find where indirect action like that is not considered action. We talk about as far as Kiddush Mechatos, the sprinkling of the ashes of Paradrum on water to prepare Paradrum water. Now it has to be done via dayin. And a Mishnah says, Hamakadish, when the person is making this kiddush, v'nofo kiddush al yodoy ayotzad, and some of the ashes fall on his hand or on the side of the keli, v'achakach nofo lashoikis, and then it falls into the trough full of water, which is where he's going to be Makadish, posel, then it's posel, because it's not considered koichai anymore. So the same way over here, he threw the ball against the wall, it bounced back, why should that be considered koichai? And the answer is Hochamayskin Beshoisis, because that Mishnah is talking about where it didn't directly come from the koyach of his hand. It fell on its own. It fell onto his hand or onto the side or whatever, and then on its own, he didn't push it into the shoikas, it fell on its own in there, so that's definitely not considered koyach anymore. It fell onto some place where it would have stayed there, and then something came, a gust of wind or whatever, and blew it in. No question that that's not considered koichai. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring another proof from a case of Paradrama. Machat shoyin asuna alacheres. If you have a needle sitting on top of a piece of earthenware, now the needle is makabel truma and became tomei. The piece of earthenware is not, because it's a shard of earthenware. The hizal leha, and besides, if it's an intact keli, then you're not able to be matahar it with Paradrama water anyway. The hizal leha, he sprinkled Paradrama water on it. Suffolk of ala machat. And now you're not sure. You find water afterwards on the needle, but you're not sure if it went directly on the needle. Suffolk ala cheres hizo mitza olav. Well, you're not sure. It may have landed on the cheres and then dripped onto the needle. Has it also possible? Then that hazah is possible. Now again, why shouldn't that be considered koichai? Because after all, the water came there to begin with from koichai. And the answer is Amar of Chinan by Yehuda Mishmei Derav Motze Itzmar. Because we're not saying that mitzah leho, that then it dribbled onto it. Motza, he found it afterwards. He found the water. So we thought what it meant in mitzah leho means that just the fact that it dribbled onto it would be possible. No, not mitzah, but motza. He found paraduma water on the needle, and now he's not sure whether it came on there directly or whether it dribbled onto there. So now it might have landed on the cheres, and then it dribbled onto there, where there's no koyach at all. There's no koyach at all. So, getting back to matters of Ritzicha, Omer HaPapa, Haiman, the Kafse V'chavre, if a person ties up the other person, V'ashkela, the Bidka D'maya, and he opened up a dam and caused a flood of water to come over the guy and then kill him, Giri Didehu, that's considered his direct arrows, Omer Chayev, therefore he'd be Chayev. However, that would only apply to the first koyach, meaning the first gush of water. But then when the water continues flowing, groma ba'alma, who then at that point is only considered a groma, and therefore he'd be potter. Again, this whole thing comes out. So the one difference is between some of the cases, between this and some of the cases we had before, the Yad Ramah points out the water is there directly behind the dam. So as soon as he removes the dam, as soon as he opens it up, the water immediately begins flowing, as opposed to some of the other cases we had before, where it takes time for the effect to start. So therefore, we can distinguish over here between koichoi and koyach koichoi. And again, this is one of those things that's brought to discuss this whole matter of electricity on Shabbos and electricity in other areas of halacha. So we see over here, this bidka d'maya is very directly comparable to it. You flip the switch and right away electricity starts flowing because the electrons were there all along and they're just waiting for the circuit to be completed, which is exactly like this case over here of opening up the dam and the water right away starts flowing.
What's the context of what Rav Papa is saying to what we were speaking about?
This is what we're talking about. This is a new discussion. We were discussing about the matter of throwing a ball against the wall and bouncing back. So now we're giving another example of koichai versus koyach koichai. So again, in other words, let's say with the ball. So he throws the ball at the wall and it bounces back. That's all considered koichai. As opposed to, let's say, for example, if he had thrown the ball at the wall and it bounced back, and then afterwards, let's say, now when it's rolling on the ground, the other guy tripped over it, let's say, or whatever, that would be koyach koichai. By the way, it's brought in this connection, it's brought that Reb Chaim Brisker and Reb Chaim Ozer would davka when it came to Havdalah, they would davka when it came to Bodo Moda Esh, they would davka use an electric light bulb for that purpose, to demonstrate that electricity really is fire, al pi alocha, and that you shouldn't think that turning on a light switch is just some kind of grumma thing. No, based on these Gemaras, it's considered an actual direct action via dying.
But they had to switch on the flick the switch.
They didn't necessarily have to flick the switch right before, the same way as when you do have, no, when it comes to saying, same way as, for example, you see a fire from a distance, you can still make a bracha on it, even though you didn't light the fire. You have anah from it. You can have anah from the fire, or even, yeah.
Fireworks.
Well, fire, no, it has to be just strong enough, it has to be a strong enough light that you can actually see something by it. I don't know, fireworks would be, unless you're really close. Alright, anyway.
Let me ask you.
Let's finish the next couple of lines so we get to a stopping point, and then, yeah. So for Omer HaPapa, Rav Papa says, here's another din. Zorak tsror lemaila. If a person throws a stone upward, v'hochal tzdodin, but it didn't go directly up. When it went up, but then when it comes down, it falls off to a side. V'horga, and it kills somebody who was standing nearby. So then he would be chayev, and it's not considered grama. Omele Marbet of Ashi, as opposed to, in other words, Rashi says, if it fell directly downward, then you can't say it's koichai, because then that's just gravity. So in other words, when it falls to the side, then it means because he put some energy in it. So if it was just a matter of pure gravity, it would come down in the same place that he threw it up. He put some spin into it that causes it to go in a different direction. So that's enough for it to be considered koichai.
And that means that if I have a wall and I had something which could kill it, I lift it up and I look over the wall, there's nothing there, and I say, I'm dropping it, and someone else comes under. I'm not responsible.
No, because you picked it up there to be, wait. Omole Marbet of Ashi, the Papa, my timer. So why is that? So he answers, Mishum de Koichai. Because when it falls, then it's considered Koichai. So Marbet of Ashi asks, E Koichai Kezel Le'el. Well, if it was only Koichai, then he threw it directly upward, so then it should only go upward. The Lav Koichai, who Kezel Le'kachas, and if there was no Koyach involved over here, then it would just directly fall, and it would fall directly above where he threw it. Ella Koyach Kochoshu, rather what we call it, it's a weak kind of Koyach, so there's some Koyach over here, so in other words, it's a combination of his Koyach plus his combination of his koyach plus gravity, and therefore, so there's enough of his koyach in there that he can be chayev. So to answer your question, yeah, if he were to take something and drop it off a wall, then it's purely his koyach. Here we're talking about where he threw it up, and eventually his koyach is going to run out, and it starts falling to the ground because of gravity. So then nevertheless, we're still saying that he's chayev because his koyach kochosh. It's true that he's assisted by gravity, but nevertheless, he still put some koyach into it as well. and therefore he would be chayev.
No, I was distinguishing between the object that I drop after I check there's no one there. And
if you check that there's nobody there and then somebody comes.
No. But I don't have property over what.
Okay, well, one second. Stop a second. The Gemara tells us elsewhere, the Gemara tells us in Makkos, and I think it may be later in Ar Masechta as well, that say, for example, a person throws a stone, and before the stone reaches its target, somebody sticks his head out of a window, and the stone smacks him in the head, and then kills him, the one who threw the stone is going to be potter. Because, yeah, so then in that...
I'm trying to understand when I'm throwing the upward, and there are people sides, not near me, but in a distance.
Yeah.
Why am I to expect that it's gonna, if it's gonna fall, it's gonna fall on them? Because
you don't.
Not for me, my koyach kachush, it wouldn't lead to there. There's a lead on what I'm doing.
No, fakert. If it wasn't for your koyach kachush, it would have fallen directly downward. The fact that it falls to the side, fakert, means that you put in a koyach kachush. Okay. Means you put in some energy to it that it wouldn't have had just by gravity. Okay. Therefore, that's reason enough to be mechayev. Therefore, taka hochal tzadin is going to be chayev because it means the very fact that hochal tzadin, that it went off to the side and didn't just fall directly downward, means that there was your koyach involved over there.
And watch out and say, I'm looking at it, I'm going away. Why does the person have to be responsible for throwing it up if the other person was Makarev himself or good?
Who said the other person was Makarev? One second, the other person is standing over there.
And he knows that it's up in the air.
Does he? Okay,
but that doesn't make me not liable.
No, hold on. If the person is able to get away, then we said before, Yochalalus Misham, a mess potter, right?
Maybe then.
Okay.